And now, ladies and gentlemen, a rising star in rock and roll. Please welcome all the way from London, England, Elton John.
The theater, the theater.
Sing out, Louis!
Theater, theater. To be or not to be. Theater, theater.
How y'all doing?
All right.
Fucking great.
It's wow.
I'm average.
I'm average.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot going on today in the world.
Like what?
Well, there's the Trump indictment.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any politics there, but throw the book at the motherfucker.
I'm already writing lyrics to that musical.
to Trump in prison or yeah. Trump trial?
Trump trial.
Trump 2024.
No. I mean, and then we were talking off mic about just a lot of activity going on Broadway and with equity and, you know, about
got some strikes potentially coming.
Some strikes coming, some potential
Unite the Road
strikes.
Is a big sort of movement right now for trying to get better conditions for touring actors, which, we need that.
Absolutely. Like, just you hear some of the stories about, like, per diems not being enough to cover basic meals and things like that. Like, it just gets
right.
Shady.
It ain't right,
you know? And, yeah, I mean, especially safety issues and health issues. Like, you're on a nasty bus for a period of time, you know, and in COVID era, God only knows what people pick up and spread around. And,
yeah.
You know, yeah, it's time to take care of our people. And I think that was really reflected in the Oscars this year. There were like two or three big speeches about not needing to kill yourself in order to make a movie.
Well, you didn't the editor of Everything Everywhere specifically was the one who was like, I want to thank the Daniels for giving me the time to literally just make it right and not putting like harsh deadlines that are don't actually matter, like,
yeah,
you know what I mean, that are just placed on by producers and have no actual meaning behind them. They're completely arbitrary. I really appreciated that. I might have Sarah Quinn Taylor come do a bonus episode because she is a delegate for equity and she is pushing the Unite the Road thing really hard
because
she's been touring for years.
Oh, I'd love to
and,
be on that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll talk to her about that and just get some more information maybe. Yeah. But you know, theater, we love it.
Yeah.
And the people that make it.
Yes.
Welcome to Theater Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Bertram.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
That's right. And each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. And we're back at it today. Lindsay, you're right. We're back at it today with our mini-series, but we're joined once again by the incredible Pam Quinn. Hey, P.
Hi. You listed a lot of great things about me during the Moulin Rouge episode. I was waiting for the list.
I did that on the one before, too. You know? This time I figure they already know who you are if they're this deep.
I did listen to the Moulin Rouge episode today because I wanted to remember what three movies you and I passionately disagreed on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it was Wimbledon was one of them.
Yeah.
A Life Less Ordinary.
Uh-huh.
And then there was one that you liked. Oh, Strictly Ballroom. So those are the three that
we'll do a debate bonus episode, just the two of us.
Yes.
Pam, it's good to see you. And also, you have a little friend there.
Yeah.
I have a couple friends here.
Yeah. Oh, you do? Yeah.
I do. I have Casper the singing dog on my lap. Do you want to say, hi, theater, theater?
Oh,
Bailey thought it was going to be a big scream.
I took my headphones off for a second. He can be loud when he needs to
be.
Well,
if I say your name, he might.
Yeah, we're not going to do that.
Okay.
he and I bonded long ago, and now if my name is even mentioned, he has a freak
That's
attack.
That's true.
I have that. Your name has that effect on me too.
I've heard that. Yeah. Every time I sign on to Zoom, I see your face go, oh, it's Bailey. yes. But yeah, no, Pam has received many likes, comments, and followers from my name being said and that dog.
That's true. Barking, so, people still ask today, where's Bailey? Where's in Bailey? The comments. Yeah. Like, he doesn't live with me.
Let's get a place together. Screw it.
Yeah, for the sake of the fans.
Well, Pam, you chose our pick for last week, Moulin Rouge.
I sure did.
Before that, this is original movie musicals, by the way, because I didn't say that. We're doing four original movie musicals in this miniseries. We started with Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did Labyrinth.
Uh-huh.
Moulin Rouge.
Uh-huh.
And now it's CJ's pick. CJ, what'd you pick?
The 2019 film Racket Man.
That's right.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the 1997 Harlan Williams space comedy, yes. Rocket Man.
Yes.
Which is a gem.
It is. I like that movie a great deal. It's really good. I just remember the scene when everyone else is like in sleep stasis and it doesn't work for him. So he's just up the whole time and they come back and he's like lost his mind a little bit. It's pretty funny. They do that years later in Interstellar or something like that. Like, but for real. And it's really
funny. Yeah.
Anyway, Rocket Man 2019. Why'd you choose it, Siege?
I had been excited. I had wanted to see this film, but it was at a time in my life where I sucked at going to the movies. And Bailey, you were actually the one that was like, you have to see this movie. You yeah. have to see it. We're going. We went to the Burbank AMC where the parking is easy.
Yeah.
And I just immediately, like, still at the very beginning of the movie, I immediately start crying, just like the first time I saw it. And then after that, like, I have made numerous people sit down and watch it, because I'm like, you have to. You just have to. So thank you, Bailey.
No prob. Yeah, I saw it in theaters many times. I just kept having to go back. It was such a good theater experience. I'm not a huge Elton John guy. Like, mm-hmm. I like his music, but I don't know his music that mm-hmm. well. I know mm-hmm. the stuff that's, like, in movies, right? Like, I know Tiny Dancer because it's in Almost Famous, and I know, you know, like, it's like, that's
Benny
how I know
Benny and the Jets because it's in My Girl 2.
There you go. That's exactly
two.
How I know that
nice
song.
Pull.
The yeah. only way I know that song yeah, is My Girl yeah. 2, yeah. I like
and
My
Pinball
Girl
Wizard because it's in Tommy.
Well that, true. It's funny that you said that. It reminded me a lot of Tommy, Rocket Man. It was like a tamer Tommy.
Tamer Tommy.
I can see that. Yeah, it's got the sensibilities. It's a bit absurd. It's a bit, right, like,
well, and generationally.
Coming of age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, he also is from that generation, too.
Yeah.
Exact
yeah.
point in time.
And then, obviously, the big Pinball Wizard number, which we'll talk about later. Mm-hmm. What is all y'all's sort of context with Elton John in general, but also when did you see this movie first? Pam, you were new to this film, right?
Yep, I was a Rocket Man virgin.
Right. What's your relationship with Elton Hercules John?
So I was a big Billy Joel person growing up. So, mm-hmm. you know, kind of transitioning into Elton John wasn't that big of a deal for me. I really started listening to him in high school and college. Loved it.
Yeah.
Scott, when did you see this film?
Well, I was one of the people that CJ nagged about seeing it. You gotta see it. You gotta see it. And I'm like, all right, I'll go see it. And did thoroughly enjoy it. And I've seen it three times now. And my context with Elton was I grew up with him. You know, I was a baby as he was, you know, hitting the top, and, you know, my folks were into him. And so I was sort of got into his music, certainly his early stuff. I think the sad part is that I really like his drug music and the sober music I could do fine, whatever. But, you know, we'll get into all that minutia later.
Well, I think he was sober when he did things like Lion King and like Billy
Elliot.
That was
a big Elton John thing.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Was Lion King.
I don't like, I could totally do without any of that.
Wow.
I mean, Lion King's great. I don't mean to piss on it, but
wow.
Lion King compared to Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, come on.
Yeah.
You're lying to yourself. You lying to yourself.
You're a lying
Bailey
king.
Is having a reaction.
I don't know. Yellow Brick Road is my favorite Elton John song.
Oh, is it really?
And goodbye, I still think if you put on certain songs from Lion King, I would cry. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't with Yellow Brick Road. You know what I mean? But yeah. I get that. I get that. That might be more nostalgic than anything. But yeah, this is... He's not my guy.
No.
Not really my guy. However, a year before this, Bohemian Rhapsody comes out. Freddie Mercury is my guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like
Rami Malek in that.
Oh, what... What?
I like Rami Malek. I like him.
What are all the Rami Malek movies that you love?
Short Term 12.
I'm trying.
Yeah, but he's
one.
Like in the background.
He rules in Short Term. What are you talking about? Supporting actor. Best supporting actor that year. Rami Malek. Come on.
No.
Short Term 12. What are you talking about? That movie rules.
I'm just saying that you haven't seen him since Bohemian Rhapsody because the first thing he did after it probably ruined his career.
Mr. Robot also is good. Rami Malek is fine. All that to be said, it's a bad movie. Bohemian Rhapsody is just a bad movie. He could not save it even if he had done the most perfect Freddie Mercury. It didn't matter. It was this weird, like, Disneyfied, watered down, like, this isn't really his life, whatever. And so the goal with this one was sort of to not do that, right? Was sort of to not water it down, not make it this like PG-13 thing and make it like, no, he lived a very R-rated life. Let's make it R-rated. Let's have his 10-year-old self come out being like, I'm a bitch, you know, and you're like, whoa.
Well, and the other thing is that the difference was Rocket Man is an autobiopic more than a biopic.
True.
And Bohemian Rhapsody's a biopic made by the gatekeepers trying to protect their interests.
Plus Bryan Singer, who...
And Bryan Singer.
Should not have ever made that.
Yeah, I've definitely felt like Rocket Man took the notes and the complaints that people had about Bohemian Rhapsody and were like, we're going to take those notes and put it into this film. I also think this film taps into, especially as an artist watching it, it taps into that feeling that... I guess I could speak for most of us when I say, like, most of us just want to be, like, loved and included, and that's very much what this movie is about.
It's also very honest, and it's honest, and then it has the magic of using those songs for musical numbers, which just are, like...
And that doesn't always work in films like this.
No, certainly not. But what it does do, and in reference to Bohemian Rhapsody, at least for me, is... Rocket Man suffers from almost all of the ailments of any biopic, which is by the time you get to act two and your hero has made it, they're on top now, and then the problems start creeping in. Almost every biopic I can think of just runs into a wall of it slows down, it becomes bogged down, it's not necessarily interesting because they're skimming over stuff. And this, they kept it alive because the songs kept that moment alive. So everything that happens after the Troubadour, where, you know, he starts to really be successful and really fall into drugs and alcohol, it's kept alive visually and cinematically because of the music.
Pam, you kind of had a take that was... like mildly the opposite of that. Do you remember when you were sort of talking about...
Yeah, I was just thinking about it and then I got lost in Scott's beautiful words.
Yeah.
I felt like I went into it not expecting the songs to come up out of emotion. Like,
oh, right.
I expected
it. You didn't know it was
a
musical.
I didn't know that. I thought it was just going to be kind of like him performing his songs and that's how they would come up. Like, you know, Elvis or whatever.
Walk the Line or...
But I was pleasantly surprised to see them come up as what the characters reached the pinnacle of their emotion and they need to sing about it. I thought that was really, really great.
And I thought the arrangement of those songs in those moments was really cool. Like, they did some really cool, like, oh, we're going to fuck with it a little bit. We're going to fuck with, you know, melody and pace. And it was, they did great with it.
Yeah. Pam, I don't know if you remember, though, that you did sort of have this take we were talking about during the watching of it where you were like,
pardon me.
It does sort of feel, though, like, it was about halfway through. Do you remember what I'm talking about where you were like...
I remember what you're talking about. about how, like, if it was a scripted quote unquote biopic about a person that didn't actually exist,
we'd
be rooting for this person.
Right.
You brought up that other movie that was like that, that was a fake biopic of someone that doesn't actually exist. Bailey, you brought up
was
a
it
movie.
Matt Damon?
No, it wasn't Candelabra. It was something else. Was it Rockstar?
Yes.
Oh, Rockstar. Yeah, Mark Wahlberg film.
That's
right. So Pam was sort of talking about, it's so interesting because it's like, it is his life. And you were kind of getting disinterested is what
I took from it. Yeah.
You were sort of like, yeah, okay. Like, he's a rock star and he's going through all this. And you were like, when does it get sort of interesting again? Which is sort of the opposite of what Scott was saying, was that it stayed interesting. And I think I could see what you were saying, like, while we were watching. I was like, oh, yeah, I guess it is just him sort of doing the...
Well, I think that Scott and I were saying the same thing, actually, because Scott was saying that it hit a wall at a point, and then once they reach the pinnacle of success, you're just kind of like, okay, now what?
He was saying it didn't do that, whereas other biopics do
no,
that.
No, I do think it did, but it kept alive... That it became
by the music.
It was still watchable because of the music. I think
that's what you were
that
saying.
That was more my tilt, because you think about what's the damn Johnny Cash one?
Walk the line.
Like it hits that point where you're, and it just slogs on forever. Ray hits that point and it just slogs on. All of the second acts are always, because you don't want to see somebody tumble into self abuse, and they usually skim over it and make it so watered down in those picks. So being able to introduce the songs like was visually and sort of kept it energized for, you know, a solid 2-hour film.
Yeah. So Rocketman 2019, same year as the live action Lion King, actually, weirdly. Mm. So Elton's having a big year. Directed by Dexter Fletcher, who most people would know as an actor, probably, before they would know him as a director.
Yeah, we talked about this the other day. Yeah.
He's really good. What I know him best as, when I looked up his picture, the first thing I thought of was Band of Brothers. I was like, oh, he's in Band of Brothers. Mm. He's in, like, every episode of Band of Brothers. He's very good in that. He's also in Kick-Ass. Mm. He's in Doom, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Layer Cake. He's in Topsy Turvy, a movie we tried to cover a long time ago. But
Jim Broadbent, right?
Yeah.
Correct, but we couldn't find it. And now it's on HBO Max, so we got to cover it.
Now we got to cover it.
You should make that one of your choices, Scott, because I think that was something you tried to cover.
And it's a
movie about theater.
It could be. I can't remember. I think I wanted to do Mike Lee, and Topsy Turvy was the first one that I wanted to do. And then we had to go to Secrets and Lies.
And we switched to Secrets and Lies. I think that's right.
Because we couldn't find it.
And then Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. He's in The Elephant Man, the David Lynch Elephant Man. And he's in Bugsy Malone, classic. But he's only directed 5 things currently. He has, another project coming out. But he did a movie called Wild Bill or something, very British, like indie film. And then he made a jukebox musical movie of the songs of the Proclaimers.
Oh, what's that called?
Called Sunshine on Leith.
I'm gonna be the man that comes.
I love that fucking song.
I do too. I'm a sucker for it. Total sucker for it.
He also did 2 episodes of The Offer, which was that, I think, Paramount Plus or Peacock. I think it was Paramount Plus show about the making of The Godfather.
That's
cool.
I never watched it. It didn't look great. But he also did Eddie the Eagle, which was with Taron Egerton. And
which is a delightful fucking movie.
Cute
little fucking movie and inspiring.
About a guy who wants to be a ski jumper.
British guy.
Oh, yeah. I remember that movie. I didn't see that.
It's cute. And Hugh Jackman's in it and it's cute.
Yeah.
He also produced and assistant directed Bohemian Rhapsody the year before.
Oh,
interesting.
Which is sort of how he ends up picking up this gig. So he's like working on it, and there's sort of, and Elton John's sort of like, okay, I want Bryan Singer to make it because he's doing such a good thing with Bohemian Rhapsody. The movie had not come out yet. And I think he was like, no, my assistant would be better. He'll do it. And they, I guess, knew each other, Dexter and Elton. So they did it, and it's great. And it's very well directed for those being his only other films.
I mean I really look forward to other stuff that he does. He just nailed it. I also thought the casting was fantastic. Those two little boys, the younger mm-hmm. versions of him,
so were just good.
So good. But then also, like, Richard Madden's really good in it. Like, mm-hmm. you know.
We'll do a step through of the cast. And,
yeah, like, yeah. Fantastic.
And then the writer is Lee Hall, who people mostly know as the writer of Billy Elliot, mm-hmm. starring Jamie Bell. The original movie. He also wrote the book for the musical, the libretto for the musical, which Elton John did the music for.
Okay.
Oh.
So Jamie Bell was like always sort of tied in to play the role because it was they both yeah. like, love Jamie Bell and they're like, oh, we got to get Jamie. He did a TV adaptation of The Wind in the Willows.
Oh, all right. Really
all right.
He also wrote the screenplay for War Horse. Not the stage show War Horse, I don't believe, but he did. He just wrote the screenplay.
The adaptation.
The adaptation, and he did Victoria and Abdul, which is a cute little. Judy Dench movie. I love that.
Yeah.
He wrote Rocket Man, and he of course wrote the screenplay of Cats.
Of course.
Good Lord.
So he's got that going for him.
Correct.
Two steps forward, three steps back.
He's got that going for him.
Yeah, which I wonder how different it is. I don't think it's that different from the stage show in terms of dialogue. He probably just wrote the concept of like what would be happening moment for moment.
Sure.
Currently, he's working on, in pre-production, is his untitled Fred Astaire biopic.
Mm. Oh, that's going to have, what's his name? What?
I don't know. As I just said, it could
Spider-Man.
Be
Spider-Man. Tom Holland.
Oh, you know who's doing the music
to the Fred Astaire thing is the girls who wrote the Bridgerton musical.
Oh, shit. Good.
Oh, right on.
Good for them.
And it's going to be a film, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Or a stage
Looks like
show.
A
film.
Okay. Film.
Looks like a film. Yeah. Seems like it's a film. Anyway, so yeah, let's step through the cast a little bit. Some really phenomenal performances in here. I guess let's start with Taryn.
Yeah.
Aces.
And yeah. I think that this gets to the root of why I'm so angry about the Rami Malek thing. Like that he didn't even get he didn't even get a nom for this. And I think that
he got snubbed as fuck.
And he sings like that. He actually sings. And I just he's marvelous. Like, and the conceit, just the performance, the conceit of being in the AA meeting. That's your through line. Mm-hmm. Of all that, and as the costume gets
as the framing device, yeah,
yeah, totally, and just how honest he is in those moments, and brutally dealing with his pain, and
you know, it's exactly how I felt about Brad Garrett from Everybody Loves Raymond winning Emmy after Emmy, while our Bryan Cranston and Malcolm in the Middle was sweating his life off doing Malcolm in the Middle, and Brad Garrett kept winning doing the same shit. I get you, Scott.
Thanks, Pam. I needed that support more than ever.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Bryan Cranston was having to deal with Jane Kasmerick on set every single
day. Oh, no. Is she not well?
She's fine. I love her. Okay. She's great.
I love her too. I'm so upset.
No, she's very kind. She's very, very cool, but she is a lot. She's a lot to
deal
with.
She's a little high maintenance.
Yeah, but so is her ex-husband, Bradley Whitford.
That's very true, I've heard.
Yeah, anyway,
I've heard that.
CJ, you were saying something.
Just something I will continue to say about Taryn's performance in this
that I love is he sounds
like Elton John, but he does his own little twist on it. And I fucking love it. It's not an impression. It's just really good acting.
Right. He's doing the font of Elton John. He's doing the...
Yeah.
They're living in the same zone, but he's not... Exactly. He's not doing an impersonation. And it feels so real and raw. But then every once in a while, he'll do something with his lips where you're like, oh, that was so Elton. Like, cocks him back a little bit or something. And you're like, oh, shit. Whoa.
Yeah.
He's great. He sings. So the thing about Taryn that's kind of interesting that I've always heard, and this may not be true. I guess I should have looked this up. But what I was always told is right out of theater school, he booked Kingsman Secret Service.
Yes.
Like, right out. And
how
so
nice for
everyone
him.
Sort of hated him when that happened. Like, all of his friends. They were just like, fuck this guy, because he just, like, books this huge thing. And it's a huge movie, huge hit of a film that spawns a sequel where the sequel is... The plot is that Elton John has his mind has been corrupted by Julianne Moore. Yes. I think, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes, you are, yeah.
And so he has to, like, save Elton John, but Elton John's, like, in a ridiculous sort of costume like he is at the beginning in the big orange. Like, he's, like, in that the whole time. Yeah. It's hilarious. So they were buds. He also sings a Elton John song in the movie Sing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So apparently they had met for that for some reason. And he sings in the movie Eddie the Eagle, which I didn't remember, but apparently he sings in that.
Yeah.
So they've done three movies together, technically.
Other interesting point, Matthew Vaughn, who directed The Kingsman, was one of the producers on Rocketman.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
So I think that's
it's all the British film. Yeah,
very
incestuous. So then some other people that were considered. You ready?
Oh.
Yeah.
Elton really wanted someone in particular. Let's see if you can guess who it was. It's an American boy band star.
Harry Styles?
No.
Oh.
Of our time.
Oh, he's not American.
He's also not American.
Justin? Yeah.
Justin, JT, Justin Timberlake.
Oh,
he really wanted him. He's like, I think it's JT. I think JT is
me. I'm so glad it wasn't.
Yeah. Honestly, though, there's a version of that that works. It just wouldn't have been the performance that Taron got. Like, it wouldn't have been as raw. Yeah. But I think it would have been interesting just because, well, actually,
Justin Timberlake struggles with
drama.
He's
not good in drama. Yeah,
yeah, he's
good
great in comedy.
Well, yeah. Black Snake Moan.
Well, that's on our list of things.
Yeah,
too.
We gotta watch that.
I would like to see a version of this film that is like a la that Pedro Pascal and Nicolas Cage movie.
Oh yeah,
where we're watching Justin Timberlake try to film
Unbearable
Rocket
Man. Yeah. Some other people considered were James McAvoy.
Okay.
A little old, I feel like, because he has to play a lot of stuff in his early 20s, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Daniel Radcliffe was considered, which actually probably would have been okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I
could see that, but he was born to play Weird Al, not Elton John.
Yeah.
And then the person who was actually attached, who they never actually filmed anything with, but was attached almost all the way up to filming, was Tom Hardy.
Interesting. Hmm.
It makes little to no sense to me.
I mean, who knows? That guy is such a chameleon, though.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
I just don't know that the person that played Charles Bronson can also play.
You just never know with that guy, though.
You're right. You're right.
Did you ever see him in Peaky Blinders?
Yeah, he's great.
Where he plays the Jewish mob boss. Like, he's fucking badass. And I'm like,
he's also someone who in the media has notoriously been kind of weird about his sexuality.
Yeah.
And I wonder if maybe he actually chose to not do it for that purpose. Like, there's a lot of videos of him, like, at Comic-Cons and people being like, hi, I'm just wondering, like, we all really love you in the queer community. Are you gay? And he'll get, like, angry and be like, why would you even ask that? It doesn't matter. And it's just like, dude, chill out. Like,
he's publicly said that he's dated men and women.
Yeah.
But he hasn't, like, declared himself
I think he just really hates the attention on that subject. I don't think it has to do with the actual
subject. No, I think he's a bigot. It's fine. I'm kidding. Tom Hardy's great. We love Tom Hardy. Okay, Jamie Bell. What'd you think?
Yes.
It's just a perfect balancing act. He's a really underrated actor. I wish he would. I mean, he works quite a bit, but I wish he would get bigger roles because that scene with the two of them on the rooftop of the apartment and the lean in for the kiss. And it's just a beautiful moment. They both play it to perfection and I just dug it.
Good sneeze, Casper. There are things I'm sure I'm not thinking of, but the last two things I saw Jamie Bell in, one was horrible and one he was very good in, but I'm not a fan of the film. He was in the Fantastic Four with Michael B. Jordan and Kate Mara.
Right, yeah.
He's the Thing. So he's like in CGI rock makeup through the whole back half. Terrible film, and he's
terrible.
Bad. It's just bad. And then he was in Nymphomaniac Part 2.
Oh,
he's
right.
In the Lars von Trier Nymphomaniac. He's very good in that. I don't like those movies, but I think he's pretty profound as the... He's like the younger man that she's seeing who is really into bondage and shit like that.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
He's great in that. He's good.
Yeah, there's a lot of good... I mean, Von Trier often gets really great performances out of people in very upsetting movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Have you ever seen Melancholia?
Oh yeah, I think I've seen them all.
It's maybe Kirsten Dunst's best performance besides Power of the Dog
and Wimbledon.
Well,
come on, bring it on! I love that
Jumanji,
movie.
Tower of
She's
Terror.
She's great in Jumanji. Yeah. I'm sorry, dear, you have the wrong number.
I remember that. That's right. It's her aunt.
Moving on.
Let's talk. Okay, John Reed. So, CJ, you said something which I found out is not true. Oh. You said that John Reed is who, or maybe it was Pam that said this. I don't remember.
I didn't say anything.
That Mike Myers played him in Bohemian Rhapsody. That's not true.
He is
in Bohemian Rhapsody, but he's played by Aidan Gillen, Littlefinger from Game of Thrones.
That's right.
So I didn't see Bohemian Rhapsody.
Good, you don't need to. There's the manager, John Reed, played by Richard Madden, who is phenomenal in this film. Mm-hmm. Scott, you kind of brought him up earlier.
Yeah.
Really solid. Aidan Gillen played him in Bohemian Rhapsody the year before.
That's right. That was the crossover. I was like, it's two guys from Game of Thrones playing the same agent, but in different movies. Got that wrong. My bad. Thanks for the correction.
It's fine.
I think Madden's not too far off from just blowing up. Like, if you've ever watched his series, The Bodyguard, where he plays he's stunning in it because he plays a soldier with PTSD who's now a Secret Service agent.
Old AMC show for a while, right? Was it like, it wasn't Paul Dark, but it was like something like that. That was like Gold Rush.
Yeah, what was that?
Some shit. I don't know. People loved that show. It won shit. I just can't remember it. I didn't watch it. UConn? I don't know. It was something like that.
Something like that. There you go. I think that's right.
Yellowstone? Yeah. No, this wasn't that.
Yellowstone.
1883? Harrison Ford? okay. He's very good. Bryce Dallas Howard?
So good.
Yeah, so good. Yeah.
He's interesting. That's the one performance that when I saw it the first time, I walked out like, I don't think that was a good performance. But on rewatch, I was like, no, I think it is. I think Elton probably like really trusted her and was like, this is my mom. You're doing my mom. It's very good. But she's American. You can feel her accent being a little much sometimes. Mm. Because they're in a musical, I'm like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Everything's a little much with a musical. Yeah.
And the woman who plays her mother is really fantastic.
Pam from Bridget Jones' Diary.
That's right. Jones. I think she pops up in the Harry Potter universe at some point. I could be wrong.
I don't recall.
But yeah, Bryce is. There's a lot of layers there. It would be easy for her to have gone to evil mom, bad mom, and she's certainly extremely flawed, but. She also relays.
She's the nurse in Harry Potter, Madame Pomfrey.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, the mom.
That's right.
The grandma.
That's right. Thank you. Yes.
That would have been killing them all night.
I don't care. No, but yeah, I knew she was there somewhere. Cool. Yeah, I don't know. A lot of I think the father gives a really phenomenal performance.
Yeah, he's
there's
great.
That scene where you meet his son, his other sons.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the most heartbreaking.
Oh, that's rough.
Oh my God.
And he asks him to sign his first like London release or whatever. And you're just like,
and it's for his coworker.
Go fuck you.
And it's for his, dad. Jesus. That's a good scene. Favorite songs?
I was just going to say my favorite scene, I think, is the hug at the end when he's looking at his younger self and the younger self is like, when are you going to hug me?
Yeah, that's sweet.
Oh my God. It was just, it was like a perfect little button and they're both in it. Like the little boy's face is amazing. And Taryn's face is just like, he's just losing it. It's great. But
I really liked the rooftop scene.
Yeah, I did too.
Acting wise, it's like one of the more solid scenes. Yeah. Jimmy Bell barely sings in this, but when he does, it's really nice.
I really like the troubadour scene.
That's the best scene.
That is so great
because it's apparently all true. Like it was all so well documented.
And who's the guy that plays the manager? that's so fucking great in it. The leader of the troubadour.
So good.
Name's Tate Donovan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So LA, like so West Side. I just love him so much.
So LA. Well, so he was on, Pam pointed out, she caught this. I would not have recognized them, but he's on Friends. He's Joshua. He's the one that she's like fitting.
Yes.
She does like his fittings for him and then like leaves a note in his pocket.
And he's also in Love Potion number 9 with Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock.
Bullock.
Can you pronounce it right one time for me?
Bullock.
It's Bollocks. Nothing else that he's in is really like super massive. Like he does the voice of Hercules in Kingdom Hearts 3. I don't know.
He just keeps popping up. He pops up. He's just one of those guys that just pops up.
But actually, fun fact, he and Jennifer Aniston dated. They were in a serious relationship, and they broke up before he played Joshua on Friends, and he said it was one of the hardest experiences of his life, having to play opposite his ex-girlfriend on the show.
Sounds really
get over it. I had to be in 6 months of Hamlet with a dude I fucked that was completely disinterested in me after the first move.
I don't think that's on the same level.
And I wasn't
getting
paid for it.
That is sadder.
Some dude you fucked and love of your life who is Jennifer Aniston might be on different levels, but I could be wrong. I don't know.
Aww, see,
were you in love with him and was he Jennifer Aniston?
Shut up. Yeah. One of my favorite scenes, and I think it's more just the way the song is set up, is the scene I Want Love, that whole scene where the family all has a singing part towards the beginning.
Oh, yes. That's
when
lovely.
It's the middle-aged Reggie that they have, the older kid actor is in it. And then the mom and the dad and the grandma singing it too. That scene is so great.
Agreed. I love it. One point I did kind of get lost on, what happens with him at the Royal Academy? Like, it's set up that that woman is going to, who's another character actress.
She plays Winston Churchill's wife in The Crown.
That's right. And she's also in Ted Lasso.
She's in fucking everything. I've seen her all over the place lately.
But there's a setup like that they're going to have this relationship or some sort of journey. And then you see her one more time where she kind of is scoffing at his rock and roll haircut, and then that's all gone. Does anybody know enough about Elton to like, what did he ever finish
it?
I don't know. I will say, oh, never mind. I don't want to say something. Never mind.
It was something high school.
No.
Is that what you said?
Okay. No, something saying telling tales out of school. Isn't that a phrase? Anyway, cut this. Yeah. This is garbage. Okay.
No, not going to do it. But yeah, I was just curious in terms of that plot thread just kind of went away, which it was moving forward. It had to move forward. It does. Like, it's paced well. The first act is really paced well. And the use of songs is fucking great.
It's one of those movies I feel like is more of an experience than like watching a beginning, middle, and end kind of story.
Yeah,
you know, you feel like you lived it in a way.
Right.
After
you
see it.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. I just looked it up really quick. All I know from a quick Google search is he studied there for 5 years. That's all.
Okay.
I saw pop up on the internet. So, I mean, it is something interesting. I mean, like, he plays by ear, which is such a cool thing to learn about him, but also just like the technique helps. Learning techniques are good.
Yeah, absolutely.
They chose to leave out some interesting things. Like, we never actually meet his band. And his band is sort of credited as like the key to his sound in a lot of ways. Like, his voice is his voice, but his band was pretty much his band through the entirety of his fame. And we never even meet them.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
They were slapped together fast. Like, they were hired for the Troubadour performance.
Right, right. But then they stayed.
And then they stayed.
Got a lot of credit for his art. So it's just weird. It's weird that we just don't even meet them. Like, we see them. And it's like, that's it. It's just interesting.
Maybe it was cut for time.
Cut for time.
Yeah.
No, it's a good length film, too.
There was supposed to be a cameo of Freddie Mercury in this because they had a relationship. Freddie Mercury and Elton John were friends.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird to like skip over that as well. But the reason was it was going to be Rami Malek. And they were like, ooh, this will be cute and fun. And then at some point somebody went,
like a new Marvel universe. But
yeah, I think at some point somebody was like, let's not do it. It'll cheapen both films, like in some, you know, like, and so I think they moved on from it. I don't even know that Bohemian Rhapsody had come out while they were making that decision. So I don't know what the decision was. He wears 53 sets of glasses in the film.
And I want every single pair.
They're all so great.
One of the best parts of the film is going through the credits and showing what each of his looks in the movie
contrasting everything
was based on, and it rules.
That's so cool. Because
they
didn't try to mimic everything. They tried to get the feel of it, and you know they were I saw an interview with the costume designer who talked about, you know, a lot of times she had to like change a lot of colors based on how they were going to shoot it and where they were going to shoot it, and that was just fascinating that she was able to riff on everything but give it its own unique flair too.
Here's a moment I didn't need that is not true, so it feels even weirder to put it in. They ask him what his name is. He's already decided he's going to go by Elton, which is the name of one of his friends. And that's a funny scene when he goes, what do you guys think if I go by Elton? The guy goes, that's my name. And he goes, yeah, so what do you think? But the guy says, "What is it, just Elton? What's your last name?" And he looks around and he sees a picture of the Beatles, and it zooms in ever so slightly and puts a little halo around John Lennon.
Yeah.
And he goes, John. Elton John. And you're like, not real. So I looked that up. It's not real.
Huh.
That's not where he got the name John. He got the name John from one of his favorite musicians, Long John Baldry, who ended up becoming a dear friend of his and even saved him from a suicide attempt one time.
Wow. Oh, my God.
So it's like, why not incorporate that? You're already telling us part of that story. Why not get this?
Because we hadn't gotten to that tumultuous part of the story yet in the movie, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even so, it's sort of like...
Yeah.
Yeah, it just feels like they missed out on a lot of opportunities to make it even more interesting.
If
like,
he had turned and seen a record of Long John Baldry and said, oh, and I love that musician, and then said that, and then later he meets him,
that's
a really cool, interesting sort of like
extra side.
But
you should write him to the director and writer and tell him to reshoot it.
Lee Hall, what rewrite this shit.
Son of a bitch.
No, I really like this script. It got a adapted screenplay nom for me that year.
Which is much more grand than
Would it be adapted?
Yeah.
Adapted.
If they
did adapted, it's based on his life. It's based on something that exists.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Just like with, or like the other one that's always interesting is sequels are always adapted. So like Glass Onion was up for adapted screenplay because it was the sequel of something that had already existed, but it wasn't based on anything. Very interesting. Cool. What else? I don't know. There's a lot of cool stock footage. They use a bunch of like the old Troubadour and like old LA shots and stuff that are just like
revamped stock footage,
which looks cool. Rather than paying all the money to like, you know, redecorate Santa Monica Boulevard. So that's kind of cool.
Choreography. We haven't talked about the choreography.
The choreo was great, right?
Oh, the
Saturday night.
Yeah, it was so awesome.
Fucking great.
Like, and the camera movement and having him out of frame and coming into frame and running around. And
well, and then you go into stuff like when they do Rocket Man, when he tries to kill himself at that party, and then they amp him up and put him on at Dodger Stadium, which I learned... He did try to kill himself, and then they amped him up, and 3 days later is when he did his big Dodger Stadium performance in the sparkly baseball uniform.
Yeah.
So apparently there were multiple suicide attempts. That's the only one they show in the film, which is fine. I think that's legit, like, to just be like, you know, we don't need to pass for Jesus. We don't need to, you know, focus in too much on the fact that he did this so many times. But he, the one that Long John saved him from was an oven. He put his head in an oven.
Oh, my God.
So, like, he's got, you know, a lot of those kind of stories. Pretty intense. But, yeah, I love the choreo. I love the absurdity of it's sort of – it's – don't don't blow up, but it's what I like about Across the Universe is that they each song sort of has a whole new take. It's like, it's very Julie Taymor, where it's like, and this song is, they're going to be floating. And this song, they're going to be painting themselves purple. And in this song, everyone has a head that's 10 times too big or what, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what's interesting about Across the Universe. And this does that too, where like every song sort of has a new take while also driving plot, which is kind of difficult to do in a jukebox.
Yes.
Right. You know,
while also like making it absurd and cool and weird.
Well, it's funny because I was thinking about some of the songs that aren't in the movie, like Someone Saved My Life, you know?
Sure.
That's, I'm like, why wasn't that song in there?
And that's
like,
based on the Long John Baldry's.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's so that I was, yeah.
And so, but it makes sense. It narratively, they would have been shoehorning stuff in. And I'm glad that they didn't. I'm glad they let, like, some of the big songs go in order to, again, make sure that that narrative is constantly moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have an important question for all of you. Who did it? Who did your song better, Moulin Rouge or Rocket Man?
Oof.
Moulin Rouge.
I agree, only because Moulin Rouge is like a new take on the song, sort of, and they add in the sort of operatic, like the moon singing in the bed, you know, and like I like the production of your song in Moulin Rouge, but Taron Egerton singing it I would prefer over Ewan, so it's kind of a hard
choice.
Yeah, totally.
I would like to note that when we watched it, when Pam Bailey and I watched it during your song, we were singing the harmony
the Moulin Rouge
from
version.
Moulin Rouge.
That's true.
It went very, it paired very nicely.
It did.
Yeah, that's true.
What were you going to say, Scott?
No, I agree. I think it, I love both versions, but I think, yeah, Taron's is sort of this honest, intimate thing, and in Moulin Rouge, it's used in a very different, cool way. Yeah. Yeah.
So the Rocket Man choreographer's name was Adam Murray. I'm about to look up anything else that he's done.
Credit.
I also really love the performance of the final. Okay, one of my favorite things, and I found this out. This is super cool. At the end, when they do the "I'm Still Standing," I'm still standing. That whole bit is actually the original music video with Taron put into it.
Yeah, they just.
I thought they recreated it.
No,
and
no.
I was like, wow, this recreation's incredible.
Oh,
like,
that's
like
so funny because you did say that during the movie too.
I was like, this has got to be like the most like
the most accurate
recreation. This is incredible. And they literally just update. They like recolored it and everything and just put him into it.
That's so funny.
Pretty freaking cool.
So fucking 80s too. It's so like 80s, like 1984. This was it. Like,
but it also really, it gives that scene in Tommy where he finally can see and he sings I'm Free and he's just running down the beach and all the people are like, what's going on? It was kind of like that. I like that scene. That's a good scene.
Yeah.
And it's a good celebration ending to the film after we've been, you know, beaten down a bunch with him and just watched it all happen. And at the end, it's like, I'm still standing. And you're like, yeah, I am too.
It's a good party song.
I get knocked down, but I get up again.
When are we going to see the Chumbawamba biopic?
Well, it's a jukebox musical.
Of one song on
one
repeat.
Song. Oh,
that song over and over again. Yeah.
And anybody,
I love that song. I don't care what anyone says.
I get knocked down. Okay.
Yes.
Thought you were all going to jam out with me. It's fine.
Well.
What else you got to say? Anything else about Rocket Man? Would this work on stage? Go ahead, Scott.
I was going to ask that question in just a second, but I wanted to bring up the elephant in the fucking room. The song is Rocket Man.
Yeah.
Two different words.
Yeah.
The movie is Rocket Man.
I think I think it's to differentiate it from the Harland Williams film. I truly think that's I was looking for it and I couldn't find any answer on that, Scott. And I truly believe it's because however, if you look up the Harland Williams film, it's spelled Rocket man without a space, but the M is capitalized, so it looks like two words. But if you look it up, like, on anything, it's two words. But, like, the way it's done as a title kind of
isn't. On the poster, yeah.
I'm also pretty sure they used the song Rocket Man in that movie.
Maybe.
I remember... This is another Scott dates himself. I remember being a little
boy. Yourself? You take yourself out on dates?
Oh, yeah. All the time.
That's sweet.
Self-care. Come on.
Bowling's got to be boring, though.
Yeah. Putt-putt probably sucks.
And the sex isn't great either.
Only he could say it. None of us could have said it.
Right? Boom.
You don't know how to please yourself?
I do. I just get mad at myself afterwards.
Got it. Yeah, it's just like... angry after effects.
Gotta go make myself a sandwich now. Yeah. No, but
with the
I remember.
Hand you did it with.
Gross.
I'm in such a vulnerable place.
Is that turning you on? Is that what you're saying?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I remember the song Rocket Man being used in the Greatest American Hero TV show.
Okay.
There's a whole like montage sequence, and I remember like. People were really excited about it. It was a big deal that they had gotten that because that wasn't too far right. removed from its initial success, so that they got it in that. And you just see William Cat kind of flopping around trying to fly. That was really the show.
The most used song in TV, what do you think it is? I think I have an answer.
Oh.
The most used song?
Like as like a needle drop of like to make you feel something. Oh. I think it's... Coldplay's I Will Try to Fix You.
I will try to fix you.
I think that's it. I could be wrong. I don't know. Okay. Anything else y'all want to say? Oh, does it work on stage? Would this work on stage?
Go ahead, Pam, please.
Well, I think, yeah, because when I went into it, I thought it, you know, was going to be one thing and it ended up being another thing. And I was like, that's what I immediately thought was, oh, this would actually work really well on stage, I thought.
I think so, too. I think you could do the things like even like the troubadour moment where everyone starts floating. I think there's a way to theatricalize that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know, and like things like that. Like, I don't think you would be able to do everything that's in the movie, obviously.
Sure.
That's not the goal with adapting to stage, but little things like that. Like, the troubadour thing is such an iconic moment of his where he jumps up playing the piano and it looks like he's flying, right? Mm-hmm. So they're homaging that. And I think you could do things like that on stage really easily, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Mary Poppins can fly, so
fly
can
Elton. Lines.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah.
So can Elton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think it would, you know, it really would be a production designer and casting
and all
super
of God's
challenge
money.
And a lot of money to really make it, you know, the spectacle that it is. But all the music and all the songs work. It all works, you know. I imagine somebody's planning it. I imagine it's being worked on.
It's only been 4 years.
Well, also because Elton's not touring anymore, so anytime that, you know, not that he needs the money, but, you know, it would be you put that out and all of his albums start shooting through the roof again in terms of sales and rentals and downloads and all that.
I had a little addition. And this is something that Scott actually put me in touch with, and I just wanted to say it. To anyone out there that is an Elton John fan, particularly if you live in L.A., they re-released a music video of Tiny Dancer a couple years ago. It's on YouTube. It's a Vivo video, and it was created by Max Weiland. And it's a fucking love letter to L.A., and it's to Tiny Dancer. Like, so if you
and
want
a
good
a lot
cry...
Of like,
is it on YouTube?
Yeah.
Just
search Tiny Dancer.
It's a music video. I think it was done for like the 25th or 30th anniversary of the song or something like that. And it is. There's some weird cameos in it.
Marilyn Manson shows up, which is tricky.
But not as
now.
Marilyn Manson.
Right.
But just all the faces. And they went around L.A. and just found some sort of legendary spots. And it's great.
It's lovely. Another thing that I've shown to many people because it's such a great little video.
Yeah, dig it.
What's wrong with Marilyn Manson? He's great. He's just an abuser. He's fine.
Jesus Christ.
Wow. Yikes.
He's really bad. Sorry, Evan Rachel Wood. You're one of my favorite actresses. I don't know why.
And also Roz from Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Learn her name. Streets of Laredo, there's that kind of funny bit throughout where, and then they finally sing together, and that's their first like moment of connection, Jamie Bell and Taron Egerton. That's a very, very cute moment. A little Easter egg that I'm reading in the IMDb trivia is that
Esme Bianco, I'm sorry, Roz,
good job. Nice. Young Reggie, when he, right before he's about to play Saturday Night, and someone like yells at him, like, play something bigger, you know, play something faster. He starts to play Streets of Laredo. That's what he starts to play. And right. that's, and they cut him off. And I didn't know that. And I'm reading that now in the IMDb trivia.
I love that.
Cool.
That's how about that?
Yeah. Also, last thing I wanted to read from this is that the title Rocket Man, the title of the song Rocket Man, is not inspired by his suicide attempt. It was actually inspired by the Ray Bradbury short story, The Rocket Man. But Someone Saved My Life Tonight is based on that. But he was like, that's not my moment here.
Yeah.
Not the song we're going to do. Cool. Anything else you want to say? Pam, you got anything else you want to say about
I'm just excited Rocket to Man? Rate the four movies.
Yeah, we're going to rank them. Is there anything else you guys wanted to say specifically about Rocket Man before we do the final?
No. I got to get all my stuff out. I loved it. I loved it. I loved the rewatch. Yeah.
Really, it's one of the great films, in my opinion. I really love it. Original movie musicals, y'all. We did a whole miniseries.
Yes.
And I only missed one of them.
You said it, Bailey. We're all like, yep, that's true. You said the truth. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, good job.
No, this was really fun. I'm glad we did it.
It was fun. Pam, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, as always.
Good times. Okay, let's do a few things. We got some things to take care of here. First things first, CJ didn't break it down.
I mean, I can if you want me to. I wrote one.
Fucking A.
Okay.
CJ's breakdown.
A sometimes surreal musical retelling of Elton John's life, starting as a young piano prodigy, desperately in search of love and acceptance from his family. It follows him through his rise to stardom with writing partner Bernie, troubled romantic relationships, ending in his eventual and continued sobriety in 1990.
Yeah. That's it. Nailed it.
Yeah. And then Lion King.
Now let's start the podcast all over again.
Yeah, we should start
it. Everyone remember everything
we
they said?
Okay. I got it.
Whenever it happens, it happens.
I'll give new takes this time, actually. No one will get to hear what we've already talked about. Okay. So we broke it down. Now let's rank these motherfuckers.
Let's fucking do it.
Oh, shit.
Bailey loves ranking shit.
Who wants to go first? CJ?
Ugh, I don't feel good about any of these. Please don't be mad at me.
No one's going to be mad. They're all four very good films.
I truly enjoyed watching all of these. It was a lot of fun, and it was fun to revisit things. So, 4, Labyrinth. 3, Moulin Rouge. 2, Wizard of Oz. 1, Rocket Man.
Nice. Scott?
Okay, so this was really way harder than I thought. And what I ultimately break down with is endurance. How long is something stuck around and still around? So I'm going to go Labyrinth, number 4. Number 3, I'm going to do Rocket Man. Number 2, Moulin Rouge. And number 1, Wizard of Oz.
Nice. P?
That's my list. That's my order.
Say it again.
The last one is Labyrinth.
Yeah.
The second to last one is Rocket Man.
Yeah.
The second place winner is Moulin Rouge.
Yitchy, yitchy.
The first one is Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great minds.
Mine's only slightly different. Mine is number 4, Labyrinth. I think we can all agree that Labyrinth is just not on par with these other films. Number 3. Moulin Rouge, which I love.
Yes.
Number two, Rocket Man. Number one, Wizard of Oz. And Wizard of Oz, again, it was my first VHS I ever owned. Yeah. I will never stop loving Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
I'm from Kansas, goddamn.
It's too iconic. It's too iconic.
It is. It's too iconic. And like you said, Scott, it hasn't died, and it was made in 1939 based on a book made before that. And it's like, this is... And we forgot... We didn't even talk about this. All three of these other movies reflect back on Wizard of Oz somehow.
Of course.
Yeah.
All three, very much so.
Yeah.
There's literally a song called Yellow Brick Road. You know what I mean? And Moulin Rouge does a lot of kind of Oz type.
Well, he's
things.
Dorothy, yeah, for sure.
Right. It's very that. And like the whole canon that we chose, and Labyrinth is very Oz, is sort of indebted to Wizard of Oz.
Sure.
Like I can't rank it above, even though I think Rocket Man is a better film that came out 100 years later. It's, or you know, 80 years later. I can't rank it.
I'll be interested to see how I feel in 5 years, and then compare, see how much Moulin Rouge holds up versus Rocket Man. But
yeah,
they're
but
both
also the music.
Great.
I mean, like
yeah,
the music of Wizard of Oz is the music of Wizard of Oz.
Yeah,
the music of Rocket Man is stuff that was pre-written. That was, you know, that was by a genius who, you know, then we added into it. It's just hard to We're comparing apples and oranges, y'all, but at the same time, we're not, because they're all original movie musicals. Dun-dun-dun.
Bam. Bam. Bam.
Do you guys have any... This is a weird one to do here.
Uh-huh.
But I want to know, if you were to do one of these four things on stage, do you have any dream roles?
Dream roles. Yeah.
Yeah. Who would you want to play?
I'd want to play the mom in Rocket Man.
Mm.
Ooh, yeah, the Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yeah,
for sure. You'd be great at that. That'd be perfect.
I would do. Well, I have done the Cowardly Lion, but I would do the Cowardly Lion again. And then I'd do a Jim Broadbent Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, for sure.
I would have a blast.
Because he can.
Yeah.
Because he can. Because he can.
Yes, that's right. I think I'd be down for a Wicked Witch of the West.
Oh, yeah.
Also, I think I could probably play Ivy in a couple years, which is Elton's grandma.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it would be fucking fun as shit to be one of the puppeteers.
Did you say in a couple of years?
Yeah.
You could play a 60-something-year-old woman.
Listen, she's very talented.
Listen, I have people already casting me in 50s roles, so I'm ready.
Sounds like those people have no idea what the fuck they're doing.
I think it would be fun as fucking shit to be in the puppeteer ensemble for Labyrinth.
Oh, fuck yeah, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm.
That would be great. Mm-hmm. What about you, Bailey?
I want to play David Bowie's Package.
Release the junk cut.
Actually, no, I want to play the... Oh, I just lost his name. The big Yeti in Labyrinth.
Oh, what is his fucking name?
Bluto.
Bluto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's great.
And then maybe, like, the voice of Hoggle or something would be kind of cute. Or, like... I don't know.
I do like that little fox with the eye patch. She's cute.
If I was the right type, Elton's father is a fucking role.
Yes.
Yeah.
You could totally play that part. Why wouldn't you be the right type? I mean, comparing yourself to that particular actor, yeah, but I think
you
could
play that part.
I just don't
know that I pull off posh British.
Well, like, yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah. But that kind of character, I mean, I think you could play.
I think in theory. I don't know that I'm... I don't know. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not being self-deprecating. I'm being
self-deprecating.
Self-actualizing.
okay. Well, let's spotlight some Los Angeles theater. How about that?
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Spitlets.
LA Spotlight.
See, do you want to start?
Yeah. The Thin Place at Echo Theater Company. Fridays, Saturdays, Mondays at 8, Sundays at 4 through April 24th. At Echo Theater Company on Instagram. And then I'm so fucking stoked about this. Celebration Theater is doing a new brain. and it opens on April 29th. It's going to be at the LA LGBT Center. It's one of my favorite fucking musicals. And they also wrote in and they were given permission to mess around with the casting. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be doing some, they have some interesting casting going on with it. That's at Celebration Theater, and they spell theater T-H-T-R.
Yes. We should pre-party. We'll pre-party at my house and then walk over.
I can't wait to see it. I fucking love that musical.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I've got a few. I got Kiss of the Spider Woman at A Noise Within, which is getting a lot of great buzz.
Didn't we cover Kiss of the Spider Woman?
We talked about it.
We talked about it, but I don't think we haven't covered it yet. Yeah.
Okay.
So that might be a trip. It's playing through April 26th. It's now opened. And you can check out more information at anoisewithin.org. We've got Mutant Olive 2.0 at the Hudson Guild Theater on Santa Monica Boulevard. Check out hudsonguildtheater.org for more information. And finally, we have Menstruation, a period piece at Big Little Theater Company at the Los Angeles LGBT Center. It's also getting a lot of really good reviews. You can check out more information at LALGBTCenter.org for more info.
Cute. Pam, you got anything you want to shout out?
I have nothing right now. When the Hollywood Fringe Festival, I'll have a couple.
That's what I was
going to
say.
About.
Start looking out for Hollywood Fringe shows. They're starting to market already, which is crazy town. It feels like we were just doing Fringe. So that'll be happening in June. We're covering it heftily.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a lot of Fringe episodes, and we are sponsoring an award again.
Yes.
Very excited about that. So we'll be seeing a lot of shows. If you're a listener who might be submitting a show this year, we want to let you know, we're not going to do one-person shows this year. Because last year we saw like 35 shows, and over half of them were one-person shows, and it kicked our butts. Mm. So we're gonna move away from that, even though we really appreciate and love that art form.
Oh,
it's not
God.
Really what we're trying to honor here.
Yeah.
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 No.
Yeah.
Fair.
Just so you know.
We want some back and forth dialogue.
We like
yeah,
the
dialogue.
Yes, correct. Which our winner was a full play. And Maddox has another play coming to Fringe this year. It's called Annex, which we covered. We did a whole episode on it.
Yeah.
And it's incredible.
And one of our other nominees, Pastiche Queen, is in it.
That's right. I forgot about that. That's right. Pastiche.
So, a lot of cool stuff happening.
Pastiche worldwide.
I think they got connected through both being nominated. I could be wrong about that.
Oh, well, let's find
out. We made it happen.
No, I just mean, like, I think that was sort of how I could be wrong. Anyway, thank you for joining us for part 4 and the end of our mini-series covering original movie musicals. Pam, thank you for joining us.
Oh, my God, Pam, it's always a joy. It's always a joy.
I'm going to miss you guys till the next time you ask me back.
A year from now, yeah. Wow.
We're going to go drinking first.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So.
And, you know, we'll have you. We'll get you back on later in the season. But also thank you for writing that bonus song
bonus
that we play
episode.
Before bonus episodes, which this is not one.
Bonus episode.
That's all.
Y'all got questions, comments? Please reach out to us via email, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Scott?
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. Our theme song is better than your theme song.
Beep.
Hashtag fact.
Bitch.
Yeah, exactly. So, who else?
Oh, I just wanted to say he also writes all of our stingers, and he's an amazing human being.
Yeah.
But finally, I want to give a big shout out to the award-winning playwright Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it.
They're smart enough for her to have written them.
That's true.
No, they're dumb enough for her to have written them. It's commentary on Los Angeles theater. I was re-listening to an old episode, and it wasn't Carol Churchill. It was something like Sam Shepard or something, and she came up. And I was like, if we haven't done Skryker by the end of this year, I'm quitting theater. And it's been over a year since then. So I have to quit theater.
No, don't do it. No, Skryker. We're going to do it one day. Someday we're going to do it.
You're kind of a Skryker.
But one day, Carol Churchill, we're going to buy you a beer.
That's right. Subscribe, rate, review. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you later. Thanks. Bye.
Is that your Madden?
Oh, once I was a young man. looked over vales and hills, saw myself a future of riches and of thrills. But on me 15th birthday, I paid my union dues, and they sent me deep into the ground. Oh, the winter wind can blow me colder. Oh, the summer's heat can parch me dry. But I'll not leave here for a fortune. I shall ne'er leave here until I die.
That was
later,
nice.
Everybody.
The theater, the theater.
Theater.